Did everybody, I liked Jose last week, if you were here. It was really cool listening to his accent and looking at his wife going, how do you translate whatever?
Yeah, that's
it was cool. Anyway, we're going to finish, well, we're not finishing James today, but we're in the last chapter, chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. And if you have a Ryrie Study Bible, this is where James kind of, it seems like he jumps around. That's why people think it's like a almost more like Proverbs. But if you read Ryrie Study Bible, it says riches, patience, and swearing. That's what this last chapter is about. So, but what we're going to look at this morning are James's words to the rich. And as you, several commentaries I read, they have struggle trying to figure out, is James talking to believers? Is he talking to unbelievers? Are these rich people saved or not saved? There's this whole controversy of who he's meaning this for. And obviously, he's writing this to a group of Jewish believers that have gone through a transition. Some of them may have been rich. And we're going to look at, in a little bit, other things he talked about, that James talked about the rich. And I was trying to think of a title for this, Riches in Reality, Money and Me, if you want an alliteration. And as I walk through this, I really want you to understand, when I say things, I'm going to be thinking about myself, okay? This whole thing with money and riches and my attitude and my bank account and my stuff, I was thinking about during Christmas, what does everybody ask when they see you first? What did you get for Christmas? Nobody ever says, what'd you give? I got a bunch of new shirts, new blue jeans, backup camera, in case you were wondering. So I don't run into things. And my kids installed it. Joshua and Jonathan installed it. It's very scary. They were taking parts off my brand new truck. And my truck, my stuff. So when I go through this and the things I'm about to say, I'm really going to be trying to preach to me, okay? Because this, it's kind of like two things that are difficult to talk about, money and sex. But both are very personal, and we're going to, as we go through this, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just, James says some tough things. Couple things that Gary Enrig, I read John MacArthur and a couple other commentaries. Gary said, money and possessions from this verse are a danger. Got to be careful. It seems like money in these verses have led people down the wrong path. Money and possessions are also an entrustment. We are given money. We work for it. But they are an entrustment from God. We are just stewards of that money, okay? However much he gave you, however much you have or think you don't have, it is an entrustment from God, every single penny. Let me go back, and if you, these are just some things James says in his book about money. Verses 1, or chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. But let the brother of humble circumstances glory in his high position. And let the rich man glory in his humiliation, because like the flowering grass, he will pass away. Rich or poor, James said, if you're poor, glory that you are a son of God. Glory in the circumstances that God has put you in. If you're rich, in your humiliation, understanding that one day your life is going to pass away, and all this stuff is just that. Okay, that's one thing he says. Chapter 1, verse 27, and this is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep yourselves unstained by the world. There's this sense that we have to be concerned about other people, about widows and orphans, people that can't take care of themselves. And I think what he's talking about is take care of them. In the Old Testament, widows were left alone. I mean, the families, basically, it was their responsibility to take care of them. And orphans, obviously, when Dan goes to West Dallas and you see those kids that come out of those places that are, it will make you feel like you are a king. Then in chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, he says, for if a man comes in your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes and say, well, you sit here in a good place. And you say to the poor man, well, you stand over there. Sit down at my footstool. It's a problem. James is looking at this, that would be our natural tendency. Somebody comes in all dressed up, and go up to, and they were starting to treat them differently. Somebody comes in here filthy, dirty. Are we going to treat them the same? Doesn't have any. The stuff of this life has nothing to do with the value of that human being. That's what James is saying. Don't do that. Chapter 2, verses 5 and 6. Listen, my beloved brethren, did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor man. Is not the rich who oppress you and personally drag you into court? So there's, something was going on there. The rich were not treating the poor well. And then chapter 2, verses 15 and 16. Where is that? If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says, well, go in peace and be warmed and be filled, and you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself. So there's this, James isn't walking around this issue. He isn't saying, ignoring the issue of wealth and poor and how we deal with this and how we treat each other. The other thing that there's a kind of a difference between what the Old Testament used to look at with money and what the New Testament looks at with possession and riches. In the Old Testament, and if you listen to any prosperity guy, I will buy you a lunch if he doesn't go right to the Old Testament and look at prosperity verses out of the Old Testament and what God promised Israel, and that Israel, God poured out his blessing on Israel. So what? So that they could pour it out on the rest of the world. Not just, they weren't supposed to be a bucket, they were supposed to be a sieve to let it go out to bless the rest of the world. And they were prosperous so that people would look and say, look what God has done, and I can now prosper you. That was the purpose. It wasn't so that they could, I think I've got one of the verses in here where it says, the Pharisees loved money. They love, look at me. Look how blessed I am. And I think we've talked about that. I remember when this Bible church we went to in Chicago, Diane's dad was the first one in the church to buy a Cadillac. It was like you were wasting God's money. And there was this whole weird issue about, what you would spend money on. Right after he bought a Cadillac, like five other people said, well, I guess we can do that. So there's this whole, it is just stuff. And I also, one of the things Gary Enrig said, and it made me think, he said, out of all the confessions he's heard, and people come to him with problems, they come to the pastor with problems, he said, I have never had anybody come to me and say, I'm having trouble with coveting. And I heard of what, coveting is the one sin in the Ten Commandments that nobody can really see. Think about that. You shall not covet. I can hide that so well, I'm going to pick on Jeff. And look at a new car. He already had a backup camera. And can you grow up in the United States and not look around and covet a little bit, maybe a lot? And I'm talking to me. So there's this difference between the Old Testament and New Testament. In the Old Testament, there was this prosperity, and it was showing that you had it was a blessing from God. Money could be the worst thing in your life. You know, look how God has blessed me. If we say that, and we're talking about the new clothes or a new car or a bank account, we're in the wrong category. In the New Testament, now God has blessed us with what? All spiritual blessings in heavenly places. It's not stuff anymore. It's not, and God does. It's not like James is thinking wealth is bad. Look, in the Old Testament, there was Abraham and Job and David and Solomon, Joseph. There were people that were wealthy, so wealth isn't the problem. Wealth and riches aren't bad. It is my attitude towards it. It is how I look at it. It is how I deal with it. It's how I spend it or not spend it. I gave out some verses. And this is where the rich aren't, it's not like condemning the rich. It's not bad to be rich. Look at 1 Timothy chapter, who has it? Chapter 6. Yeah. Tell what verses it is.
1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 18. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, not to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds. Generous and willing to share.
Riches come and riches go. Teach the rich. Timothy said, teach them. It's not bad to be rich. He's not saying, give it all away. I mean, he's saying, teach the rich in this present world to not fix their hope on that. You know, we'll get into that in a little bit. So being rich isn't bad. I mean, I know a lot of guys I play handball with, some of the biggest oil guys in Dallas, and they're driving Chevys. You know, they could be driving whatever they want. And they're believers, and they're generous, and they're nice guys. And you can't, like, and I covet them all the time. But who's got Luke chapter 12, 21, and to 25? Lauren, I gave you a couple out of Luke, right? Okay, just read these. These are kind of just dealing with this. Go ahead and read them, and then. Yeah, read that. There's this whole, I mean, this is the passage where the guy's asking, and I was saying to my soul, you have many goods, many years to come. The guy wants to build bigger barns, and God says in verse 20, you fool, this very night your soul will be required of you. That's and then Lauren started reading. So is the man who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. If God gave us stuff, I need to think about, what do I do with it? What do I share with this? The stuff isn't bad. It's what I do with it. And he said, for this reason I say to you, don't be, I hate these verses. Don't be anxious. Don't be anxious. I live my life anxious. I hate to say that. But when I'm reading this, I'm like, do I really believe? This was Jesus talking. Think of how we have bird feeder outside. And every time I watch those, I'm thinking, He feeds them. Why am I so anxious about tomorrow, about where? For this reason, I say to you, do not be anxious for your life as to what you shall eat, or for your body as to what you shall put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. So there's this whole, James is kind of, that was his brother, half-brother that was said that. And James is kind of, he's going to remember that, and he's going to talk to us about that in chapter 5. Who's got Luke 16? Scoffing at him. You can't serve two masters. You're either going to love one and hate the other. You can't do it. And then it says, and the Pharisees were listening and scoffing at him. Stupid. I mean, blessing. This is God blessing us. Look at the car I drive. Look at the clothes I wear. Look at the position I have. They were scoffing at him. This guy from Nazarene. A Nazareth? Who the... What does he know about money? The creator of the universe, you know. Anyway, so that's kind of a background. Let me read verses 1 through 6 of James chapter 5. And again, when the guys that I've listened to, they make this be really harsh words. I'm not, you know, it depends on how you want to read them. The words are tough, but is James like, I don't know if he was mad. He might have been saying this because he was trying to just get to their heart. Okay, so it depends on how you want to, the intonation on how you read this. So James, he just talked about planning, proper planning, and to pray first. And then he says, come now, you rich. Come now, you rich. Weep and howl for your miseries, which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you, and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasures. Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields, and which have been withheld by you, cries out against you, and the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. You have lived luxurious on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure, and you have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and put to death the righteous man who does not resist you. So these are not easy words. These are not... But is he just saying, please, rich, listen to me. Look at riches correctly. And there's really four issues, or four problems, or four sins that he deals with. The first one is verses 1 through 3. Weep and howl. This is like, you know, have you ever seen a funeral in Israel or in the Middle East where people used to pay... mourners. I was going to say whalers. That didn't killing whales. No, mourners to howl at your. Well, that's what. Those are the same words. It's like, oh, weep over this, mourn over this, your miseries which are coming upon you. If you trust in riches, they can. You know, who knows what tomorrow's going to bring? You know, I mean, I got a 25-page thing from the bank from Chase Morgan on the predictions for 2014. And have you ever looked at these charts? I can't read the charts. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know. You know, it's like, oh, could be gone tomorrow. Why? Don't trust in it. And that's what your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments have become moth-eaten. I'm telling you, when we moved from Chicago, I had a bunch of wool sweaters. I mean, you have to have wool sweaters in Chicago. Like, it's going to be 11 below in Chicago tomorrow. And, you know, wool sweaters and turtlenecks. And I couldn't give them up. I kept them in a closet. Well, about 10 years into it, I'm like, you know, where the one day I could wear one here in Texas, and I looked, holes all over it. I kept all that stuff. Why didn't I just give it away to somebody? Why didn't I just leave it there? And that's what James is saying. You've accumulated all this stuff. I've thought about those wool sweaters eating up. They were beautiful sweaters. Your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and silver has rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you. When people talk about your portfolio and stuff, my parents never had a portfolio. They never thought about buying stock. They came through the Depression. I was going to bring a jar that my dad, I still have it, and I poured it out yesterday. It was a jar of nuts and bolts. He kept every nut and bolt. Because why? I might use it someday. You know? And we were looking through it for washers, and I never found one. But I keep that jar just to kind of remember. They came through the Depression. They kept all that stuff. But it just accumulating stuff I can't use. And I'm talking to myself. In the last days, you have stored up your treasure. Gary, and I don't know where he got this statistic, but he said the fastest growing real estate in the U.S. is storage space. Steve was here. Storage space, 2 billion square feet of places to put our stuff. Now, if you have a storage space, I'm not. It's okay. Do some of you have a storage space? Do you? Well, yeah, you got 6 families. I mean, it's like, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, am I more spiritual because we don't have a storage space? Well, you should see my garage, you know, in the closet, in our game room. We've got Jonathan's stuff, hangers, hangers, plastic hangers. What'd she say?
No,
Steve said dinner. Oh. I'm telling you, this is not easy when you read what James is saying. Money and clothes and food. You got to accumulate all that food, and you just, this is an aside. Dan goes, I weighed myself. Well, I didn't weigh myself. We were trying to weigh boxes for Jonathan and Kim because you got to be under 50 pounds. So in order to weigh it, you get on the scale first, right? Then you pick up the thing. Well, I got on the scale first. Disgusting. I mean, it was awful. I was like, this is the most I have ever weighed in my life. So Diane goes, should I just get rid of, like, the junk food? Well, I got Whoppers for Christmas. Oh. And I said, yes. And no, please. If I have accumulated all this stuff so I can... can't put my pants on anymore. I mean, and James is saying, think about, earlier his half-brother said, think about the birds of the air. Look how they look, the prettiest things. Why do you think God won't provide for you? I mean, so that's the first thing. Accumulating stuff that we really don't need. I really don't need. Second thing is in verse 4. And this is now, this kind of hit me also because, you know, I'm like an employer. Behold, the pay of your laborers who mowed your fields, which have been withheld by you, cries out against you. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting have reached the ears of the Lord Sabaoth, the warrior God. This is a problem. In the Old Testament, and I was going to, we can go back there, there's, that says you pay them. When a person works, you pay them. Remember the parable where the guys come and the Lord says, you know, work for such and such and you get paid, and then the people came later and you got paid the same, and the people that worked all day were like mad. I would be too. You know, it's pretty common, well, not common story, but easy to understand. I'd be mad too. And he said, well, you made a deal, you know, and I paid you. You got it. You had a job. And I've tried to tell my kids, I've spent a lot of my life complaining about my job instead of being happy I got one. You know, at HKS, it was the first place I ever worked where they gave bonuses. And it became like a weird time because all of a sudden you get a check and it was more than you had 2 seconds ago. And you go, wonder what everybody else got. I'm telling you, everybody's looking around like, I wonder what he got. And when I read this, you better be fair to employees. You better pay them. And again, what is on the news all the last couple days? Minimum what? Minimum wage. What's the minimum we can pay people? As believers, what we ought to be thinking about is how much can I pay them and still make money? Not how little. When Diane's dad had this catering business, he was pretty generous. You know what I mean? We were waiters. I was washing dishes. You know what I mean? It was not like a, you know. How much can I pay him? Not how little. And I just did 1099s. So we just went through how much. And I'm, I don't know. So this speaks to me. Be fair. Don't, you know. If companies were just, you know, and it gets into the whole government, socialism, capitalism thing. If people would just be fair and pay them as much as they could. And I just read an article about the president of Apple, I forget his name, not Steve Jobs, he's gone. But he made $4.5 million. $4.5 million. And I was like, who needs $4.5 million besides me? But he gave away $4 million in stock. So you're kind of like, you know, you gotta be careful. I mean, when we read these, don't think about Steve Jobs or the oil guys or somebody, think about you. And me. That's who this is dealing with. I don't care. I can't do anything about the president of Apple. Well, I buy his stuff. But this is, as an employer, I need to be fair and not think about how little I can pay them and how much I can hold back. And then verse 5 is another problem. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure and have fattened your hearts in the day for slaughter. There's this, when we buy a cow, and people do this like, you do this with fruits and vegetables and cows and everything. They feed them a lot and water to bulk them up when you know, before they slit their throat. And they, oranges, when we were in California, they had an orange field. They flood that field right before the harvest because it sucks up all the water and the oranges go. And when he was saying this to Israel, they saw, when you were in the temple, they saw slaughter every day. This was like a, you know, they're bringing the best calf, the best this, and the best to the temple. The Jews were like, whoa. This was, and what I wrote here is, it's not about me. Don't be self-indulgent. Don't think about how much easier because I'm thinking about this. How much easier could my life be? When can I retire? When can I stop working? I need to rest. And then I read this. You've lived luxuriously on the earth. Go down to Costa Rica, which is a nice place, you know. But I'm not thinking many of us would live in that place, Joshua said. You know, and it's a nice place. But it's still kind of third world, you know. I mean, they don't have. How do you like a hot water? When you turn on hot water, you like it? There's no hot water anywhere in Costa Rica. You know, they wash their dishes, they do all that cold water. They don't have water heaters. They don't have. And when I read this, I'm thinking, I haven't been to a lot of places in the world, but yikes, we got it pretty nice. We have it pretty nice. I turned the shower on this morning and it was hot. It was nice. Think about it. Think about it. And then the last one is verse 6. You have condemned and put to death righteous man. He does not resist you. They're exploiting the righteous. There's oppression. And what I thought of, has any of you read Randy Alcorn? What's that book? Safely Home. Have you read that? It's this, you need to read it. Well, maybe not, because you'll feel real guilty. Because everything about, have you ever tried to look for stuff that isn't made in China? It's almost impossible. You can actually Google shirts made in America. You can actually buy them here, but when you read this book about Neil Alcorn, he talks about, and when I was in China, I'm telling you, you see a different side of the world. When, you know, we went to this sign company and they said, do you think this sign company can make these signs? And I saw what they were doing. And no heat, it was 35 degrees, there was no heat in the building, there was ice on the floor, I was slipping around, there were cables laying all over the place, there was, the bathroom was a building with a concrete floor and a hole in it. That was it. No water, no nothing. And I'm like, no wonder it's so cheap. You know, this place would have been shut down in a minute here by OSHA. And their guys are getting paid like $5 a week. And when I read this, and I still buy shirts. I mean, it's hard not to buy shirts from China, you know, but we got to be careful. Are we oppressing people? Because I want a cheap shirt. Me, I'm just talking. So anyway, then there's, let me talk through this. Again, this is kind of Gary's outline. There's solutions to this. If you're accumulating stuff and I can't use, what's the opposite? Generosity. Not accumulating, be generous with this stuff. That's why God gives it to us anyway. Be generous with it. What that is, you know, it's different for me than you. It's different for John. Remember there was an issue about Joe Biden? Like, he gave away $400 a year. Gave $400. I'm guessing he could afford more than that. I'm guessing. But I start looking. I don't care what Joe Biden gives. That's between him and God, not me. What do I give? That's what I got to worry about. Not what Steve does or Diane does or Joshua does or Ron. Am I generous? And I got to hold money loose. It could be gone tomorrow. Just hold it loose. Let it go. And if you read, what's the guy, Dave Ramsey, I heard him speak. He said, there is a kind of a hierarchy. He said, take care of your family first, the church, and then society. I mean, there is kind of a hierarchy. I don't think you give when your family is really suffering or something, or they need something, or your dad needs something. You know, maybe we, anyway. The solution to accumulating stuff is be generous. The solution to not being fair is don't exploit your employees. When I worked for this Al Lorenz, everybody thought he was one of the wealthiest guys. Am I going too long? I'm almost done. He had a big steel business in Chicago, and he had everybody that wanted miscellaneous iron, that's what it was called, came to Al Lorenz. We did John Clement Stone's mansion, and there were blacksmiths there that did these grates and this on the windows and this gateway that was just absolutely gorgeous. So everybody that wanted stuff done nicely came to Al Lorenz. And there was a strike. The steel union went out on strike. And, well, it was funny because Al Lorenz paid over union scale so that he could get all the best guys. So he paid over union scale. So I'd go walking in the building. I was non-union, so I'd go walking in all these protesters. You ever walk by steel workers? They're not, you know, these aren't like, you know, and I go, really? I'm just doing drawings. I'm not doing anything. And I walk by. Well, Al goes, come on in the back of the shop. And I thought, I'm not going to work on this stuff because these guys would be mad. We were putting up black paper all over the windows. Because at night, these guys would come in and work in the factory at night because they were getting paid more than union scale. And there was no protesters out there at night. So he had the best guys, but he paid over. And that's what I thought of the minute I saw this. Don't exploit your employees. He paid them more than the union. So they were out in front of the building striking for less money than they were making. It was kind of the irony of the whole thing. And then number three, if instead of being self-indulgent, what did I get for Christmas? You got to think about what we gave. And I talked to this lady, African-American, that worked at Cook Children's, and we talked about this one time. And I said, you know, if people would just self-regulate, the government wouldn't have to tell us to say, you got to pay a minimum wage. If we would just self-regulate, pay a family what they need and self-regulate, live, you know, and again, you know, I drive by certain houses, and if you studied architecture, you love houses, you know, big houses. And I drive by houses, and I think, boy, that'd be nice. We were just at, Joshua sold a uke to this guy that lives in Addison. It was a nice house, wasn't it? And how many ukes do you think he had? I mean, he's into ukulele. Anyway, when I see houses like that, I'm like, wow. And we just need to live, maybe regulate myself so I live a couple steps below what I really could live at and give the rest away. Could I do that? Could I self-regulate? Could I pay people more than they probably would make somewhere else? I've had people tell me, you're paying people too much. And they think, well, I could be making more. And then the last one is justice to the poor and not oppression. Let me just close with this kind of. This isn't, it's not a political statement, although we could turn it into that, socialism or capitalism. That's not what James is talking about. I heard a quote about the difference between socialism and Christianity, like where people were in the early church, they sold everything we're living it together, you know, living in common. Socialism says what's yours is mine. Christianity says what's mine is yours. Big difference. Big difference. I have a friend that's a dyed-in-the-wool union or Southern Democrat, and he goes, I love paying taxes. I thought, well, maybe he does. If you're a Democrat, you gotta say that, right? You really do. And then Ben Carson, I heard him say this: there are good and bad in both economic systems. As Christians, we gotta take the good on all of them. And Gary Inrig, at the end of his thing, said this: we are not saved by being generous or caring for the poor. But if we're saved, we'll be generous and care for the poor. That's what I think James is saying. And I'm telling you, I'm preaching more to myself because it's not easy. I just like that. So let's pray. Father, you have been so good to us. Just as a church, as individual families. Father, you have given us stuff to pass through our hands to be a blessing, to help the poor, to be generous, to not be self-indulgent.